And thank you again to everyone that's read, that's helped us open the meeting up. And I'd like to take this opportunity to welcome those that may have joined us since we first started. A huge welcome to any visitors to our meeting tonight, and a massive welcome to any newcomers who might be with us as well. We hope to hear something that's going to encourage you to keep coming back. So, yeah, like I say, we are a speaker meeting tonight. It falls for me to both welcome and introduce our speaker tonight. I'm really pleased that they've managed to come along and share with us this evening. This is an individual that I've known for a while, a few years. Recently moved down to where I am, kind of in my part of the world. And we've kind of connected on all kinds of different levels, and I really enjoy his company, and I enjoy the things he has to say about recovery. So without further ado, I'm going to introduce you to Frankie, who's come along to share his experience, strength and hope with us for the next 40 or 45 minutes, whatever he's comfortable with. So Frankie, the floor is yours. Please share with us, my friend. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve.
Lovely things there. Thank you. That's really nice. Normally at meetings, that way we just get pushed off top board in the deep end. There you go. Experience, strength and hope. And it's true what Steve said. It's I've only really spoken to Steve a lot more over the past year. And let's not try and make this sound too bad. I found that Steve's an asset in my recovery. It's quite important for me to have people around me who are in recovery who have time and I think a level head. I suppose more will be revealed. I'm Frankie. I'm an addict. Thank you for letting me be.
Hi, Frankie.
Hey, I know some of them
Frankie.
Voices.
Hey, Frankie. Welcome. Welcome.
Hi, Frankie.
Hey. Cool. Thank you. Wow. If I'm going to do an experience, strength and hope, well, I always struggle with experience, strength and hope. So I'm normally better if I've got a topic. Then I don't have to think too much about me. I can go into kind of ego mode. But experience, strength and hope. Okay. A bit like our, the ones before our predecessors used to kind of say, what was I like? What was I like? Where did I come from? Came from central London. I grew up in Clerkenwell in the city of London. My parents are not addicts, but my family's full of people with addiction problems. Most of my cousins have addiction problems. How could I put it? A lot of my family, and this is one of the rules what I've found as well since I've moved, is people who are caught up in crime don't talk about it. And a lot of meetings I've gone to since I've moved to the West Country, I've met some gangsters in the meetings, and I think, oh, okay. Where I come from, you don't talk about that stuff. So it's that leading towards being secrecy. So as kind of life went on, I don't know if it's nature or nurture for me. I haven't got a clue. I just took a long period of time to get to a place where I started to recognize that some of the things I heard in meetings, I could latch on to. Those similarities, it wasn't a language I'd ever heard before I got here. And I'm a very wordy person. I'm somebody who, I didn't need to go to school really, but I left my secondary school in Camden Town when I was 11, 12 years old. I went to a really lovely school in central London, which was very middle class central London, and at the time Cat Stevens was one of the ex-pupils of the school who used to he was making a lot of money, and he'd pour some money in and he'd send us off on holidays and so on. And it was really lovely, and dropped in this school in Camden Town, and it was with I went from a mixed school to an all boys school, and within a year my family had to take me out. I was working down the market, and when I think about a 12-year-old today working down the market, I was thinking to myself, they're just a child, they're a baby. And I was down the market flirting, acting in the way I was, and as I kind of say, I was, I like to make fun a little bit sometimes of the AA guys. I like to say to them, I didn't drink for 12 years and then I started drinking. Well, I didn't drink for the first 12 years of my life, but I had started smoking at the age of 8. 8-year-old smoking, how crazy. I don't even know how you'd get older fags at 8, but I did. And all of that stuff, when I look back with hindsight, which is a beautiful thing, was done compulsively. Not in an addiction sense, but if I opened a packet of cigarettes, would smoke them all. All of this seemed to add to it, but I didn't know any of this till I got to NA, of course. So on the fast forward button, I'd done really well for myself. On and off, I'd learned a few trades. I became a professional jeweler. Then the crash came. Then I looked around and my friends were either thieves, taxi drivers, or printers. So I went into the print, and then there was a few adjustments from the Conservative government at the time, and then they was all fighting the printers and they all lost their jobs. And through all of that, I then moved over to doing timeshare. I had family connections out in Spain and Tenerife, so when I did timeshare out there, and I lived there for a while, and I actually got flown back from Tenerife through having pneumonia. Now, I spent most of my time out there after getting unable to turn up to do the timeshare, working in clubs, and if you've ever been abroad, I was one of those annoying people abroad to Spain, that is. I was one of those annoying people who'd be outside who'd give you the free champagne. And then I was the guy who collected the glasses, and I was the English guy who could sell the puff to the tourists. And then I was the DJ, and then I worked behind the bar, and then I became the handbag thief, and then things were just spiraling. But I didn't notice any of this. And I came back to England when my print skills got involved, had a print company, started earning some money, doing really well. Had a Corvette with my partner, red Corvette. I didn't even have a driver's license. Very unmanageable. But all of this is kind of rushing towards this place where I got to. The world changed. Instant print wasn't needed. All the money we was getting had stopped. The King's Cross fire had not long happened, and I had a house up in Islington, which I'd nearly bought, and I'd progressed from selling cannabis up to selling coke, and I hated people who took cocaine. I really despised it. I didn't even like the drug myself. I took it, of course, but I didn't like it. But I was a fully fledged heroin addict, and I'm always reminded in the meetings, it's not about who our connections were or what we used. But however, I am aware that there was always that need for more for me. It was never enough. I progressed. There was always on to something else. And I was always trying to slow myself down. And so fast forward again, 1992. I'm up for 17 robberies. I'm at the Crown Court in Parliament Square. I've been transferred from the court in central London. And I had this barrister that I thought was really shit because he didn't bring me a packet of fags or a tube of fags while I was in the cell. And when I was being sentenced, I got off on a technicality because their video cameras were so shit. It was really bad. I was kind of like, I was such a Mr. Big. I was the drink, the drugs, the lifestyle, mainly the heroin, got me to a stage where I discovered that if I went into a Threshers off licence at the end of the evening, I could pop up in front of them in the mess I was in. I thought I looked good, and basically terrorise them with a kind of a big wah, you know, as you pop up. Anyone who I look like Gollum, so they must have been. I scared me, so and I would snatch money out the till and whatever I could grab and shoot off. It was not the days of previous stuff, which had had a bit of intelligence to it. This was all desperation stuff. And wow, I went to Wandsworth. There was an NA meeting, and one of the prison officers, what I used to call Screw, opened my cell and said to me, "You need to go to an NA meeting." And I wasn't till I was on my way to the NA meeting that I thought, why did he ask me? I was puzzled, you know, why me? And I'll kind of answer that a little bit later on. Well, I'll go to this meeting in Wandsworth. I'll get down to the meeting. There's a famous footballer doing the share, and I just thought, oh, he doesn't do what I do, he doesn't take the drugs I take. I looked at all the people around me, the ones in prison, and H&I in prison is a bit peacocky. It's a bit alpha male. And I'm able to do that. I'm able to tell stories, you know, and lies as well about people injecting in places where they shouldn't and so on. And I'll just sum this up really quickly. I went in on a technicality on a 9-month charge because they couldn't put the firearms and the video evidence down. And the judge put down if I was to reappear, that I would get an automatic 8 years. Well, I came out 2 years later because this is another indicator I didn't realise, I kept getting urine screened, or piss test, as they called it. And I kept getting a positive, and I stayed in there for 2 years. So I rolled out in 94. And when I came out, I thought, I'll go to an NA meeting. And I went to the Milton House meeting up in just off Highbury. And I went there, and I did actually have that feeling that some people say where you walk into a meeting and you fit. I fitted really well. There was lots of Italians, and King's Cross was in a mess, and I really liked it. It was all really cool. And it bugged me in the NA meeting. I thought, why do they keep saying they're addicts? And then I had another thing what was going on for me. I was thinking, why is it every time we go to a meeting, they keep reading them cards? They read the same shit over and over and over and over again. Why do they keep doing that? I now know today that addicts really have to be told quite a few times, and especially this one here. And so I embarked on deciding I wasn't going to go back. There was that with a few other poignant moments. I had a 1-year-old daughter, and my partner had left me because the other idea I had to stop using, this was really knowledgeable idea, was to if I stopped selling drugs, the problem would go away. It's very, very obvious to me. If I don't have drugs and don't sell drugs, the problem's going to go away. So the minute I stopped selling drugs, my partner left and moved in with someone else who was dealing, and I was left with a 1-year-old child. Then I found myself trying to be clean, walking down Hoxton Market with drugs in my mouth, with a big fat Motorola on my side. And the phone rang, and I went to pick the phone up out of my pocket. And my daughter, who was about 2 or 3 at the time, said, "Where are you? What do you want?" As like a parrot would do, in mimicking. And it spun me out. I started thinking of the Sly Stone record of babies making babies and all that kind of madness. And I thought, I've got to stop. This really has to, I really need to do this. I really need to stop. So I then spent the next 7 years in NA, going to different meetings in North London, attending, listening, doing the tea. A couple of times I'd done some step work and stuff and had some sponsors. But I hadn't fully committed. I didn't realise. I didn't understand that I was sicker than the average bear. I didn't understand any of that, because when you get to NA, what happens is you've been lonely for such, I was so lonely for such a long period of time, and I didn't even understand any of that. When I got there, people were friendly, people spoke to me, even the people I didn't like the look of, and people would give you cigarettes, and then there was other people who had been around like 6 months who bought new jeans, would give you their jeans, and I didn't realise how far down I'd gone. And all of a sudden I'm in NA and I'm just bobbing along, going to meetings. I had a community. We were eating afterwards. But I wasn't getting well. I was attending meetings. I was chatting up girls. I was, yeah, trying to be cool. And I was nothing had changed about me. I was still the same idiot. I remember I had a motorcycle. And I was with my friend Jack, and we was up the Greenland Road meeting in Camden, and parking the motorbike in the middle of the meeting, right in the middle of the room. And didn't understand any of it. Well, while I was there, someone said to me, Frankie, you need to go to treatment. And this, at the time, it was about 94, 95. So I went to this local drop-in. Of course I qualified, and they sent me off to treatment. And before I went at this NA meeting up in the Angel Islington on a Wednesday, I made this big announcement, I'm going to treatment. When I come back, I'm going to be all fixed, which got a real good laugh. And a couple of people slipped up to me afterwards and said to me, when you go to treatment, don't forget to take a tennis racket. I thought, oh, yeah, cool, okay, I'm going to treatment, I'll take a tennis racket. So I shot down to Lily White's and nicked myself a load of Fred Perry white gear and a tennis racket and shot off to treatment. Well, I didn't realise, of course, till I got to treatment, I wasn't going to be playing tennis and that, because that's what my vision of going to treatment was going to be, you know, nick a pair of Ray-Bans where, you know, and that's what they do in treatment. That's what they did in the papers in rehab, in the Sun newspaper in rehab. And I had all that bollocks going on, and I did step one, two, and three, and I was telling people I'm powerless because I'm in prison, and I'm. It was all just madness. When I look back, I think to myself, how did these people, you know, how did they get so much misdirection? Well, it comes round to a time where a couple of friends died, blah blah. As it does, I'll speed it again. Get to 2003. After 2 years of prison, 8 treatment centres, I forgot to mention I went to Rochester Borstal when I was 15. There was quite a bit of institutionalised stuff going on with me. And I got to that place which I really recognise on how it works, where it says, in desperation we seek help. And I was very desperate. I got into what was treatment centre number 7. 30 days I was there. Basically, I'd appointed myself as group leader, and I'm taking the meetings and I'm talking to everyone, and I've got it all together. And I smuggle my girlfriend in, because anyone who remembers what 30 days is like, it's quite easy to for the fireworks to go off when you're 30 days or 60 days. And of course, got the girlfriend coming from London, smuggled her in, got kicked out of the treatment centre. It was like I was crying, and they'd called the police because they wanted me to be dropped at the train station, because I think they'd realised that I was a danger to myself and others. So I get to the dropped off by the police at Western Supermare station, and I'm thinking to myself, fuck this, 30 days clean, I've been around 10 years, I'm going to jump off at Bristol and go thieving in St Paul's. And this woman got on and sat down in front of me when I was thinking of getting off, and she threw her keys on the table. Poor woman called Carol, and she threw her keys on the table, and she had a black NA key ring. Well, I puked all over until we got to Paddington. And I got to admit, she, just by listening, just by taking some of the dairy off and asking me what did I plan to do, really, really helped. You know, I don't know if I'd be able to do that with someone myself, you know, I possibly would. But, so I get to Paddington, I go to the War Is Over, not the War Is Over meeting, pick up the pieces in Tottenham, go to the meeting there and phone my sponsor up, go back to the hostel I'm in and start really on my time in recovery. So my sponsor gives me a task. He says to me, right, we're going to start doing some step work. So I start doing the green and gold. Never done it before. Went through it. Did it in timed moments. I did 30 minutes a day, regardless of whether I wrote or not. Turned phones off, did the writing of it. And I actually went through it in 6 months. And so that became a badge for my ego. That did. That became a badge. And then the next thing, about 7 months on, my sponsor at the time, Alan, decided we're going to do that again, but we're going to do this. The whole thing's going to be nothing to do with using. So nothing to do with using. I went through the step work again. And I got to a stage where I was just over a year clean, and somebody came up to me and they said to me they wanted me to sponsor them. And I went back and I said to my sponsor, Alan, I said, this guy's asked me to sponsor him. He said, well, you can't because you still smoke. I'm like, what? He said, no, you have no command over powerlessness. You still smoke. And I was like, fuck you. Fuck this. Fuck you. You know, who do you think you are? You know, but inside myself, I so wanted to be an NA soldier. I wanted to be up there. I got me quote for people, I've worked the green and gold, and also I'm strutting around NA going to every meeting, totally knowledgeable, but I'm still the arsehole. I'm still this self-important idiot. And so with all my might, I tried to stop smoking, and I can't fucking do it. I can't stop smoking. My girlfriend at the time said to me, she was going to bed and hinted that if the sooner we go to bed, the sooner we can sleep together. And I wanted to go outside and have a fag, but I also wanted to go in the bedroom. So I went outside and had a cigarette. And I remember smoking this cigarette and really pulling on it, because I wanted to smoke the cigarette and be in the bedroom. And I thought, I've got to do something about this. So I phoned my sponsor. It's 11 o'clock at night. I'm such an inconsiderate person. He answers the phone, and I said to him, listen, Alan, I don't know what to do. And I said, I'm acting compulsively around the smoking. And he said to me, what you need to do is go and buy, I can't remember the name of the guy's book now, a book on how to stop smoking. Oh, I can't think of his name. Alan Carr, that was it. Wang Carr. Alan Carr's book on smoking. So he said, you've got to buy it with your own money, go and buy the book. So the next morning I got up, went to Waterstones, wherever it was, bought the book, rung him up, dutiful soldier, yes, Alan, I bought the book. He said, I need you to read it now onwards. When you finish reading it, phone me. So I start reading the book. About 4 hours later, I'm two-thirds of the way through the book. I ring my sponsor, Alan, up, and I say to him, you know what, Alan, I'm reading this book. It's really a load of shit. It's really a load of bollocks. He said, yes, but you haven't had a fag for 4 hours, have you? And that got me. That got me. I thought, you know what, distraction's working for me. And I managed to get that just for today. He said that thing to me, what we would glide over in the book, of put yourself on a 5-minute basis. I can't actually do that with food at the moment. I'm struggling with food, but I put myself on a 5-minute basis and I stopped smoking. I haven't smoked since. But the major thing which started to happen for me as I was going through with my program was I'd got an understanding of the steps, and I'd learned that I needed to go to step meetings, because just going through the steps isn't enough. It helps to get a deeper understanding. And when I got to 2 years clean, my sponsor had become this big kind of famous sponsor in a treatment centre, and I decided to change my sponsor, and I happened to be going to the European Convention. I'd been asked to share at the European Convention because I was very programmed up and was a good book quota, and I was off to the European Convention in Snowdonia, and I was in the car with this guy who was visiting from America, who was also sharing there, and I'd sat in the car, and he asked me loads of questions, and it's kind of his trait, and I realised that I didn't actually understand. And he was saying to me, he's really messing with me, he was saying to me, how can you share on something that you don't understand? He said to me, what's powerless mean? So I told him I'd been in prison and, you know, how I'd lost my missus and so on, and how one is too many and a thousand's never enough. And he turned around to me and said, no, that's not powerless. That's not powerless. And I was like, well, what is then, smarty pants? What is powerless? He said, I'm not telling you. And for 2 days, I followed this guy around the convention, and I kept asking him, and I kept asking, what's powerless? What's powerless? And he kept saying, you don't know. I'm not telling you. So I thought to myself, I'd heard this guy share a couple of times. I thought, I want him as my sponsor. He seems to know what he's talking about. And when he explained what powerless meant, what a power greater than myself meant, for example, you plus me is a power greater than me. Quite simple. But I hadn't heard anyone say that before. I literally hadn't heard anyone say that before. So I start connecting with this guy and doing some work with him. And I start doing really well. And before I know where I am, I'm in this place where I'm getting meetings started, I'm getting involved, things, it's like I'm up to 4 years clean now, things are going really, really well. I'm got a regular girlfriend who I'm dating, I ended up marrying, and but I'm in this meeting that started in central London with three other people, and the meeting's getting really successful, and I'm getting a bit of a peacock chest again, and I'm really loving NA and feeling really good. And I said to my sponsor, I said to him, because at the time I really used to practice a lot of the rituals of praying and basically a lot of religious stuff. And I'm not like that now, but I was at that time. And I remember saying to my sponsor at the time, I said, Mickey, you know, I think it's about time I got another sponsee. And he said, well, why don't you pray for one? Ask for a sponsee. So like a good little addict, I was on my knees. I had a new place to live in, a girlfriend, family was starting to warm up to me. So I'm on my knees and I'm like, please, God, give me a sponsee. I go to this meeting on the Sunday morning and I'm up helping lay the secretary desk out, putting all the books out and everything else, and with chatting away with some of the other addicts. And all of a sudden I feel this poke in my back. And I turn around and there's this little ginger-headed bloke standing there. And he says to me, here, you're going to be my sponsor. And it was like, I looked at him. I listened to him. And I thought, fuck off. The scarcer, I'm not having anything to do with scarcers. I said, go away for 30 days, stay clean, come back and see me. He terrified me. I thought, God, I forgot about it, as you do. 3-4 meetings later, he turns back up going, hey, you're my sponsor. And to be perfectly honest, I was too frightened to get rid of it. I was too crying to say no to him. So I said to him, okay. And I gave him some stuff to read in the basic text and some stuff really kind of difficult stuff I hadn't been given. I told him stuff to underline in the book. I gave him like 30 days or so to do some writing. I gave him some of the worksheets to do. I said, and then come back to me. Bloody hell, 30 days later, he comes back. He's done all the writing. So we go up the cafe up in Evershalt Street. We sit there, he reads out this step one. I do the same thing to him my sponsor's done to me. I explain to him in a nutshell that powerlessness isn't about the car crash. It's about rolling down the hill without the brakes. And I kind of explained it to him about his powerlessness. And I see him have that little moment of recognition and awakening. But I still didn't treat him very well. In the sense of everything I did with him, I said to him, how long is this going to take you to do? And he'd, in a flash sense, he'd go, I'll have that done in 2 weeks. Well, 2 weeks' time, I was on his case. I was like, have you done that? Have you done that? Have you done that? Bloody hell. After 6 months, we're going through step 12. And by the time I'd gone through this step work with him and got the routine going, I was changing. Never mind him. I was changing. What had started to happen was I was doing that thing what it says in the book. I started to get an empathy. I started to identify with him. I started to understand what it was like. You know, he had children that were using. He'd been in prison, you know, where people didn't know where he was. And he had all these different things. He had family rejection, family had put money out on his head and all sorts of things. And I lost I lost that thing with his accent. I got to a place where he taught me how to have some empathy. He taught me how to have some consideration. He taught me how to have some love. He helped change me. And I got to a place quite easily where by this time of being really considerate, helping others. I haven't sponsored anyone in that kind of regime before, but with all of that, and then with moving on towards joining London Convention committees and the support of other addicts, what starts to happen for me is that I actually start to have a different change of perception and a different change of attitude. I start to be more of not rationalizing and justifying in my language, because I realized that was intrinsic, because I saw it through other people. And I realized that you have to do that thing of pausing. You have to do that. I had to do that thing of when I'm listening to people talk, it's not about just waiting for them to finish because I need to say my bit. It's about actually that active listening we mentioned here in NA. All of that helped change things. All of this has helped change me from being that very violent, aggressive person that I was into somebody who has far more compassion. And it's also what it's done is it's changed my musical taste. It's also changed the awareness of what I need to eat. It's also made me realize and wake up. All these things I didn't get before made me realize that the people I hang around with, they're the reflection of what I am. And my grandmother said that to me just before I got into recovery. My grandmother, before she died, she said to me, you know who you are by who you hang about with. So it was all there. And at that time, the people I hang around with were all drug users. Now things are different. Now things are very, very different. As time's kind of gone on, I've got to this place of being, a lot more considerate. I know what I want. I know what I need to do for myself. I've worked out how to make money. And I've worked out how to be a really good granddad, because I wasn't really a good dad, but to my granddaughters, I'm a really, really good granddad. And I've got to say, this wasn't easy. None of this was easy. When they say it's very easy, I didn't find it being very easy at all. You know, it's not as easy as putting on weight, but it's like, you know, it wasn't very easy at all. And yeah, considering I was the sort of person that when I used to take my socks off, they made a noise. You know, I'm in a place where every year I get new clothes. I'm aware of the seasons. You know, my wife has a secondary illness and I have to look after her. I never thought I'd be looking after my wife. And yeah, it's just, how could I put it? Yeah. That's kind of like the monologue of my recovery to a certain extent. I haven't kept an eye on the time, Steve. Could you let me know the time, please?
You've got 5 minutes, a couple of minutes, whatever you're okay. comfortable with, man.
Okay. Oh. Yeah, so thanks. I didn't realise I would be kind of monologue like that. And yeah, that says the same. My experience, strength and hope, something I'm not really too good with. There's loads of stuff I haven't mentioned, and I do like to pick it up a pace really bit normally when I share. There's loads of stuff which is, I get frightened that it's from ego, but when I'm around people like yourselves that are in recovery and NA based, I've done a lot of service. I've been to a lot of different countries and done shares, and they're all different places I wouldn't have gone to if I hadn't been involved in recovery. I did a main share at the European Convention in Israel. You know, I've been to Macedonia, Slovenia, helped set up the Croatian Fellowship. And I don't say these out of ego. I'm just saying that I wouldn't have even gone to these places. Seriously, I wouldn't have even gone to these places. And there's been so much. I've spent a lot of time in America. I've spent the past 10 years going every month to visit my sponsor in America. I've done quite a lot of shares out there and visited quite a lot of meetings. 4 years ago, my sponsorship group became a sponsorship family of 150 people. And it collapsed. The reason why it collapsed is because about a quarter of the group got religion. They got religion. A lot of the visiting Americans that came over, they started getting caught up in this thing called the Believers, and it fucked it all up. But that for me was good. That gave me a break. Now I sponsor four people, one who's 2 years clean and three of them that are over 10 years clean. On May the 15th of this year, hopefully we get there before the meteorite hits us, but I'll be 18 years. And that will mean I've been around the fellowship for 28 years, but I'll be 18 years clean. And it's funny, I was at a meeting last night in Bath on the Friday night meeting, and something struck me. It's a Living Clean meeting. With a lot of the meetings I've been involved with, I kind of use a bit of my forceful self-will and give them names. The first meeting I ever gave a name to was The War Is Over, which is still running in Tottenham. But the meeting on the Friday night's called Getting Clean in the Bath. So, I like that. The Sunday morning meeting, just to give it a plug, is called Houston, We Have a Problem. Last night in the meeting was reading about relationships out of the Living Clean book, and there was something that struck me. It was on page 63, and I'm a good book quoter. I like the literature, I really do. Power greater than me is the literature. And it says, we work the steps to clear away the wreckage of our past, which was true up until step 9. All it was moral psychology. I didn't have some of those awakenings other people seem to have got. But there's a bit which it says just after that, says, we use a sponsor to help us address the wreckage of the present, and we use the traditions to learn new ways of how to get along with others. And ain't that the truth? I always ring my sponsor up with current issues. I never speak to my sponsor about past issues. It's always about the current stuff. After I've let him finish talking, of course. But, you know, my recovery has gone as if it's kind of on steroids. And then it's changed. What's now happened is I've got to a place where I'm speaking to a lot of older addicts because I've done a lot of recovery stuff. And now I have to do some service at home. And I'm in a different part of the country, a different fellowship. A lot of the local meetings I go to are what I call wine and a line. And their favourite topic is sharing on relationships. And I'm kind of missing those step 9, step 11 meetings from London. And yeah, I'm just in that place of it's mainly because of the virtual meetings, I've been able to make connections with new people and realize how beneficial all this is. The virtual meetings, they've really helped me on a different level. And this bloody recovery, it's always that same thing. You don't realize it's good for you until afterwards. Everything I seem to have with hindsight, you know, the problem isn't the problem. It's my attitude towards the problem. That took me about 5 years to get that in recovery. It's my attitude towards the problem. It's how I see things. I was a really dolly out the pram person. Now, it really is a lot more liquid sunshine. It's not the day's shit. It's a lot more liquid sunshine. I'm not a happy, clappy, obsessively happy person. But I do embrace getting older because a lot of my peers haven't. There's three of them that I know of people I used. One's had his leg cut off and he's quite vocal in NA. The other two are walking around with oxygen cylinders. And I'm on my way to getting an oxygen cylinder. I went to St. Martin's Hospital last Monday. I'm not there yet, but I'm on my way to it. So I suppose sharing will get a bit cut down a bit. But I'm very, very happy. Most days are spent with me out walking the dog. And then I come back. I connect with people in recovery. Look after my wife's needs. Check the internet, check the little bit of work that I do, check my family, look after my parents who have dementia at the moment. Yeah, I've become that bloody thing that I hated in meetings. We become a productive member of society. I'm a responsible member of society now, and I'm happy to be a responsible member of society. It's quite a relief being away from all that insanity. Yeah, I'm a happy customer, and I don't think I'd have got this if I hadn't have been involved and actually give myself to doing this. So yeah, I'm gonna leave it there. I'm sure I would have had a lot more spiritual wonderful quotes, but Steve, thank you so much for inviting me to share. And yeah, my dog's waking up at the same time, so I think he's going to be sitting on my lap in a minute. Yeah, thanks everyone for listening to me.